today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
The thing that I always like to say first is like, and this is in the world of commercial photography, you're taking a photo to appeal to someone else, right? Not just yourself. So the first thing that I always like to say is like, who is this photo for? What do they care about? What would appeal to them? What would grab their eye? The more that you can be inside your customer's head, the more that you're going to have all of these answers. So this kind of goes away a little bit from traditional photography in the sense that it's like, we're not necessarily focusing on a perfect exposure here. We're mm-hmm. focusing on what the person that you want to attract with your photo cares to see.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we are taking website-worthy product photography. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back to this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. As always, I am your host, Raymond Hatfield, and I'm excited to be here today for several reasons. One, this is the first podcast that I'm recording here from the new desk setup, which I was telling you about last week. And I gotta say, it's really weird to be sitting down for once and talking to people rather than standing all that time. But it's definitely a change that is gonna take some getting used to, but overall, so far, I'm really enjoying the journey. But today, before we get on into the interview, I really want to give a massive thank you to Little Andy for leaving the podcast a 5-star iTunes review. Little Andy says, "For years, I've said that if I had a second career, I would be a photographer. I bought a new camera and searched for a photography podcast for education and inspiration. I was so happy when I found the Beginner Photography Podcast. I love learning from the guests and Raymond, as well as participating in the photo community." Little Andy, you know, I'm not sure who you are because these screen names are kind of crazy, but thank you so much for leaving your review. I seriously love hearing, you know, how the podcast has helped you learn and grow with your new camera along with the Facebook group. So if you are listening and you're not part of the Facebook group already, I want to invite you to come and join the Facebook group as well. It is a very supportive community of other photographers also new in their journey. And they understand, you know, we all understand that we're at different stages of learning photography and that there's no such thing as a bad question. We're all happy to help. So if that sounds like you and something that you want to be a part of, come join the conversation on Facebook just by simply searching Beginner Photography Podcast, join the group. And if you want to show your support for the show, leaving an iTunes review is seriously one of the easiest and most helpful ways to do just that. But just be sure to leave your name at the end of the review so I can give you a proper thank you and not make an idiot out of myself trying to pronounce some of these screen names. So this week, I'm chatting with photographer Kelly Lawson. And Kelly has kind of an interesting start in photography, but I know that many of you are actually going to relate to it, or many of you are going to feel like that's where you are and that you hope that you can get to where Kelly is. So you'll understand what I'm saying here in a second. So today, she shoots products for brands and has actually released a new course all about product photography. So today she's going to tell you about some of the things that are in that course, right? She's going to tell you a lot of the tips and tricks about product photography. And at the end of the interview, I think she has a link to the course as well if you are interested in that. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Kelly Lawson. You spent 7 years getting a degree in healthcare field before giving it all up and transitioning into photography. What was it specifically about photography that kind of stole your heart away?
I think that's a good question. I think about it every day. And I think it was a combination of things. So I don't think it was any one thing in particular, but it started with my desire to be creative outside of my day job. And I just thought photography was the most sensible thing. It was useful. It was something, you know, that would bring meaning to my life to be able to capture memories or, you know, anything really in a beautiful way that I would treasure. So just bringing the value into my own life. But also it offered me a little window into entrepreneurship and freedom. So I think it was sort of a combination of all of those things. It started as a hobby, you know, a desire to create beautiful imagery for myself, and then it expanded into a whole new life.
I know that you have kind of several irons in the fire right now in terms of photography and also teaching and digital courses and whatnot. You mentioned there, you know, entrepreneurship. I'm sure that's right. There you go, entrepreneurship. Was that something that you were looking for in the beginning, or do you think that that aspect of it developed after you got your hands on a camera?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think that aspect of it developed after I got my hands on a camera. I think it was sort of inversely proportional to my job satisfaction. So as my day job satisfaction dropped, my interest in photography and its potential grew. And then before I knew it, one thing replaced the other thing.
So you got your camera, right? At some point, you're there, you're at your day job, and you're thinking, this just isn't doing it for me. I'm not enjoying this. And you decide to buy a camera. You know, for whatever reason, there's a million reasons to decide to buy a camera. But now you got this camera in your hands and you start shooting. Did you master this thing right away, or were there some struggles?
Oh, heck no. There were struggles. So I bought the camera with my first or second paycheck. So I guess to give listeners a little context, I went to university to become an occupational therapist. I started working in that field. And for the first time, I was getting a regular paycheck. And despite the fact that I could not afford to buy a beginner DSLR camera at that time, I decided I'll skip out on bills and groceries. This is important to me right now. So I found a DSLR camera on eBay for $600, which is Canadian dollars. So for you guys, that's like a couple bucks.
Jeez.
And I bought the camera and it came and I was very excited. I unboxed it. I thought, this is going to change my life. I'm going to take the most beautiful photos. And everything screeched to a halt. I had no idea how to use it. I stuck it in auto, took a couple of photos that looked horrible, and then I stuck it on a shelf and it sat there and collected dust for some time thereafter.
So what was it? Obviously, you know, you decided to skip out on bills and groceries and stuff like that. That's a pretty big decision, and one that is, you know, not very smart for many people. So obviously the desire to have this camera was there. So even before you had the camera, what was it that drove you to photography in the first place?
Yeah, I think it was really just that desire to be creative and to create beautiful imagery. And I think around that time too, you know, like social platforms were on the rise. So we're starting to see more digital imagery into the mainstream at that point as well. So I thought, you know, I want to be part of this. I don't want to just take a regular photo and at that time, you know, take it to Walmart or whatever, Target or wherever, and get these photos developed. Like, I want to understand this on a deeper level. I want to be able to create photos that look like magazine covers. It doesn't seem, you know, like that difficult to do. Anybody can do it. I can do it. I want to figure this out. And it's kind of fun even hearing myself say that now, because my work has been on magazine covers since, you know, way back then, when I sort of had this vision in my head of what I would produce when I bought the camera.
That is awesome. That is a good feeling.
Yeah.
Was photography or this creative outlet for you really important in your childhood growing up, or was there something that sparked this? Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Yeah, I mean, like as a child, I probably wouldn't have even thought of it. The only, you know, I love flipping through those old photo albums, by the way. So my dad did have a DSLR camera. I'm pretty sure he just used it in auto mode. I don't think he ever really got that into it, but he loved to, you know, have toys and things. So he would take them on family vacations and things like that. It wasn't really necessarily a really big part of my childhood, but I think in hindsight, you know, the having the ability to cherish these images and recall these moments in time were really driven by the photos. Without the photos, I don't know that I would have those memories. You know, they're so easily lost, and especially in today's busy world, your brain is so full of everything else. Like, how would you remember that family vacation that you took in the old tent camper on that weekend in the fall, you know? So I think that definitely there's like a deeper value to having photos for me that maybe I haven't quite untapped until right now. But for the most part, even through university, I wasn't the photo taker. I had a close friend who loved to take photos. She had one of those little point and shoot digital cameras that she took with her everywhere. She would get the photos printed in triplicate and share them with us. So even in those days, I was pretty you know, unaware of any desire for photography. And that would have been in my early 20s, not to like age myself here, but that would have been in my early 20s. And really, it kind of felt like it was covered by someone else and I didn't need to do it. So I enjoyed having the photos. But I think at that point too, I was just really focused on schoolwork and, you know, trying to make sure I wasn't wasting my tuition dollars and, you know, just that kind of thing. So it wasn't until I got into that full-time career that I really thought like, okay, this is something I want to try.
So when you got that camera and you're like, okay, here we go. I'm going to start taking these magazine quality images. This is going to be great. I've seen all the, you know, photos online. Here we go. And you take those first few hundred or those first few thousand photos and they're, you know, they're garbage, right? Like we all start off just taking garbage. That had to have been kind of a struggle for you to kind of deal with, as it is, I think, with everybody. So how do you think that you overcame learning the technical side of photography?
Yeah. So, I mean, like anybody, I'm sure, who buys a digital DSLR camera and thinks that all your problems are solved, you've got this beautiful machine now, you're just going to point it at something and click a button and, you know, be on the next cover of GQ or whatever. It none of that happened. And it was very discouraging. And I definitely had to, at that point, deal with the guilt of having skipped out on, you know, groceries and bills to afford to buy this thing that wasn't working the way I imagined it would. And the way that I dealt with it was to put it back in the box and up on a shelf and let it sit there for a while and try to forget that I made that poor decision. And then I think it wasn't until I realized that, you know, I just really needed an outlet. I really needed to give this another try. My job satisfaction was reducing in those years. So like I said, it seemed to be inversely proportional in that respect. So, I reached back out for it. So I bought it in 2006 and it sat there for 2 years collecting dust. And in 2008, and by the way, in the meantime, I bought another lens because I thought that that would solve the problem. I was like, okay, this isn't working. Like, what else do I need to do? So I walked into our local camera store and I said, you know, I bought this Canon Rebel and it had the kit lens on it. And I was like, you know, it's just not doing what I thought it would. What should I do? And they happily sold me. I'm trying to think of what lens it would have been. It didn't last very long anyway, but they happily sold me. It was some type of a zoom lens for $300 or $400. And I put that on thinking, here we go. Still no.
Yeah.
Record scratch. So it's all of that stuff sat on a shelf for 2 full years. Before I realized like, okay, you know, there's got to be some other way. And that's when I took, it was a night class in 2008 to try and understand it a bit more. And in hindsight, I'm not a great student in that context. I really kind of need to figure things out on my own, but I really just needed some confidence to know, like, you can figure this out. Like Marie Forleo says, everything is figure outable. Like there's nothing wrong with your brain. You're going to figure this out. I needed that confidence. And I think as soon as I turned the corner and realized, like, I got this, I can figure this out. It might take me a little while. It might take me a year or two, but I just got to stick with it. And I just started to really take photos, fiddle with the settings, take another photo, change the settings again, take another photo. And now in hindsight, when I think about it, as soon as somebody said to me, you should buy a nifty 50 lens. That changed things for me as well. As soon as I had the ability to really see the difference in the camera settings, and like the nifty 50 lens is a gift, in my opinion, to the photography industry, because
I agree.
It's affordable and it's versatile, and you can finally get to see the impact of changing your aperture setting, for example. And now that I'm talking about it, that actually changed things for me. I bought that nifty 50 lens. At the time, I think it cost $120 Canadian, which again is like a couple of bucks for you guys.
No, it was the same price here.
And well, it's more now. I think it's closer to $200 now. And that really changed things. I went, wait a second. Now I can get creative. Now I can start to understand how all of these exposure aspects work together and how I can control the light a little bit more. And that's when things really changed.
Do you think, was there, can you recall maybe any photo specifically where you had some sort of like aha moment, like, oh, this is all that I needed to do. And then from that point forward, things just kind of worked themselves out.
Yeah. So when I was first getting started, I took a lot of photos of my dog. So in the early days, there's a lot of dog photos. And then I decided like, hey, I'm going to like try this a little bit differently. And I did a call out on Facebook for anybody with kids who might like to let me experiment with their children. And of course, everybody, like, you know, there was lots of response for that.
Yes.
And I did take a photo of a little baby girl. I actually did a blog post about it because I took this photo of a little baby girl. Looking at it now, you know, it's not perfect by any stretch, but it was like something that I suddenly felt excited about. It was the moment that I was like, oh my gosh, I did that. That looks like that. And I took it and it looks amazing. And the mother loved it and we all loved it. And it was great. And you know, I'm happy to share that photo with you if you want to throw it in the show notes, but it really was the kind of that moment that I went like, I think I can do this. I think I got this. And again, it was using that nifty 50 lens with some open shade, natural light, and, you know, that really low aperture setting that just made everything look pretty gorgeous. And yeah, that was definitely like a pivotal moment.
I can think of my same photo that, you know, was very similar and brought out those same feelings of emotion. And I think that that's pretty common among photographers. And as long as you get that first win, that really gives you the confidence to kind of continue on. So I'm glad that you stuck with it and that you didn't just leave the camera up there on that shelf for another year, because, you know, who knows where you'd be today. So
yeah, I know. Who does know? And like, it's exciting too, because I do host photography workshops and I see that moment happening with people now. Like, I don't know if it has a name or not, but it's the same thing when somebody takes a photo and you can feel them radiating with excitement because they're like, look at this one. And that's when things, I think, start to change. It's like that little dopamine drip that you get. That's like, hang on, I want to feel that again. Like, let's get this camera back out and see what we can do.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So obviously, you know, you started off with getting people in front of the camera, photographing them, children, maybe people. At what point did you transition into something that you work on a lot today, which is product photography?
Yeah. Well, it was really kind of a combination of things. So as I entered into my world of photography, I also along the way decided that I wanted to dabble in retail. So I opened just all the things. I'm like, I only have this one life. I got to try every career possible out there. But you know, just part of my love for entrepreneurship, partially born from the love for the city that I live in and wanting to contribute to its vibrancy. I opened a eco fashion boutique and, suddenly I have my own products that I am now adding to, you know, e-commerce websites and things like that, creating an Instagram presence for this business. And I started to look at photography a little bit differently, more from like a product photography standpoint, but also a branding standpoint. And I used all of the photography knowledge that I had in my business, obviously, but it took a little bit of a different spin then. And I started to understand now differently how commercial photography works, specifically when we're selling products. And it was a bit of a different game altogether because I was paying attention to more things than camera settings and proper exposure. I was paying attention to actually targeting a specific audience with what was inside the frame and appealing to that audience. And so then, yeah, I delved into the world of product photography through that business, fast forward a couple of years, I sold that business because I had way too much on the go. I couldn't handle all of the things. It was definitely overwhelming. But in that couple of years, other businesses that were sort of within my network were like, we need to learn product photography from you. We love the way you do it. We love seeing the traction that you're getting. Like, how do we recreate this magic for ourselves? And I was like, hey, girlfriend, like, I'll show you, like, just come on over to my studio. So I started like that. And then the next thing, the demand increased and I was doing like 8 to 10 people workshops. And that all kind of started to feel overwhelming as well. And I thought, hey, what if I turn this into a digital product that's a little easier to deliver than the in-person type of workshop? And so that's kind of the evolution that led me to creating a product photography digital course that helps the same types of people, but from kind of all over the world to teach, or sorry, I'm going to re-say that.
To learn.
Yeah. Sorry. So I created a digital course that helps people outside of just my geographic network to create beautiful product photos for their businesses.
Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today. Let me write that down real quick. Sorry. So obviously, you know, shooting products, this kind of evolved naturally, it sounds. It wasn't something that you kind of sought out to do. And I don't think that product photography, you know, for many people is a hobby that they get excited for, right? Most people get into photography for, you know, taking pictures of their kids or their dogs or, you know, family events, things like that, right? Landscapes. So how was that transition for you? Was this able to still kind of fulfill your creative bucket that you were looking to replace when you were at your previous day job?
Yeah, definitely. So here's the thing. I love teaching. My mother was a teacher for like her entire working career, and she always discouraged me from teaching. She said, your life will be run by buzzers, because she was a high school teacher. She said, don't do it. Like, don't get dazzled by the summers off. Don't let any of that fool you. It's a horrible career choice. And I don't agree with her, for the record. These are her words, not mine. For that reason, I always just kind of turned my back on anything education. I thought, you know, this isn't going to be for me. And I love teaching. So when I started to teach this to people and see their excitement for what they were doing, and I think people do get excited by product photography because I've seen it. And I think for folks, like for myself, I felt that excitement with my own business because I thought I get to create this visual brand for my business. That's exciting. Like, the marketing side of things for me got me very jazzed up, like understanding the customer that I'm talking to and then understanding on a deeper level what appeals to them in photographs was very exciting for me. And I think in today's age, like we'll say in COVID times even, a lot of businesses needed to shift everything online. So a lot of businesses were suddenly needing to rethink how they were getting their products in front of their audiences. And it's not always viable to hire a professional photographer every time you need to do that. So there was definitely some excitement for the digital course for product photography, even though it doesn't sound sexy or anything like that. I think people got it right away. They knew that it was something that they were going to need in their businesses. They knew it was a skill that they were going to need to have in-house, especially again during COVID times. And for the most part, product photography isn't just, you know, like splashing some cologne into water at a high shutter speed with great lighting anymore. It's something that most e-commerce businesses need. And it's also with the kind of the rise of influencer marketing and influencers online, we're not just advertising products that we make ourselves anymore or that we're selling ourselves. Now we've got a whole host of people that need to understand how to take beautiful product photos for their affiliate marketing efforts, for example.
Yeah, there's definitely a use for product photography, and I'm sorry if my question came off as if, you know, to downplay the importance of product photography, because obviously it's very important. I guess just that, you know, early on, I'm not sure many people, like, go out and get excited to buy their first DSLR, specifically to take pictures of, you know, maybe some handmade jewelry and stuff like that. But I definitely see the use for it, for sure. So when it came to your store and taking photos of the products that you actually had, can you maybe just give me an example of something that you would have photographed?
Oh, gosh. So we had everything from... when we started the store, I should say, because things evolved a little bit over the years, but my original vision was we're going to have eco-conscious, like ethical fashion products. So by nature of what that is, it tended to be like independent fashion vendors, so independent makers. So basically you could trace back like a degree or two of separation to the person who actually made the products that I was selling. So yes, they were fat, like some of them were clothing. But then there was also apothecary. So, you know, like beauty products, I guess I'll call them. And then things like, candles, stationery, gosh, let me think, water bottles, coffee cups, basically anything. I mean, what I started by thinking about my customer. So anybody who's a marketing geek would be like, yes, of course. So basically I thought of my customer as, you know, a 35-year-old new mom, you know, sort of middle income, and what things would she get excited about if she walked into a boutique, and that's what I filled it with.
Okay. I could definitely see my wife getting excited about some candles and coffee cups, especially with fall here now. Yeah. She loves nothing more than a nice warm coffee cup. Yeah. So let's go ahead and use that as an example. If you are given a coffee cup, right? You show up to work. Hey, look, here's a coffee cup. And now you have to take photos of it. Where do you start? What's the first thing that you even think of before you, you know, take your first photo?
Yeah. So a couple of things. And because I like to geek out on marketing a little bit. The thing that I always like to say first is like, and this is in the world of commercial photography, you're taking a photo to appeal to someone else, right? Not just yourself. So the first thing that I always like to say is like, who is this photo for? What do they care about? What would appeal to them? What would grab their eye? The more that you can be inside your customer's head, the more that you're going to have all of these answers. So this kind of goes away a little bit from traditional photography in the sense that it's like, we're not necessarily focusing on a perfect exposure here. We're focusing on what the person that you want to attract with your photo cares to see. So in some cases that might mean maybe it's a little overexposed because she likes something that's bright and colorful, or maybe it's something that's a little underexposed or dark because they're, you know, that's more appealing to the person that you're trying to attract. So it sort of wipes away the traditional rules of photography in that sense. And it goes more to, what does that person want to see? What would light them up? What would get them excited if they saw it?
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. Do you want your photos to have more life? Do you want to know exactly what camera settings to use and why? Well, professional photographers all over the world capture beautiful images by shooting in manual mode. Why? Because it unlocks your camera's full potential. But how do you know what settings you should use? Well, I want to break that down for you in my free ebook, Picture Perfect Camera Settings, which you can download over at perfectcamerasettings.com. In the book, I'm going to share different lighting situations that you'll find yourself in and photos that I've captured with real camera settings and how to know which settings to change to get the look that you want. So don't wait. Download your free copy over at perfectcamerasettings.com to unlock your camera's full potential. Now, let's get back to today's interview. If that makes sense, I'm just trying to think of if somebody was listening, you know, and they had a coffee cup at home that they love and they want to take their first photo of it, what's probably the first thing that you would tell them to, obviously, I understand, you know, you got to figure out who the photo is for, but maybe from a exposure standpoint, like as you're about to take the photo, what's that first thing that you're going to do or collect or think about and bring into the frame? What is that?
Yeah. So now I understand your question is definitely
I ask
tactical.
Bad questions. I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I actually just made a Facebook Live video about this exact thing just yesterday. So basically what I encourage beginner photographers to do if they're taking product photos is to, the first step is to start to try to understand light. And I always like to say, like, forget about your device, because I know that a lot of my students, the first thing that they'll do, so I've got retailers, let's say, for example, that are my product photography students. The first thing that they'll do is take a photo and go, ah, this looks awful. And then they go to Google and say, how do I take better product photos? And then Google does a really nice job of showing them Amazon light boxes and all these gadgets that you can buy. And I'm guilty of the same thing. I went to the camera store and bought a $300 lens that was completely useless to me. Mm-hmm. When what I didn't realize is that what I really need to do is understand light, and then I need to understand how to control it through my camera settings. And those two things, you know, I ignored, my students ignored, they end up spending money unnecessarily. And so the first thing I say is, like, you've got to understand light. Look around you. Start to look at how it behaves. Hold your hand underneath, like, the light in your house, your overhead light, and see what that does to your skin tones. Like, look at the shadows. Start trying to understand the light. And once you start to pay closer attention to light, things are going to change for you. And I think that, again, is one of those less sexy photography topics that gets overlooked really quickly in the early days, because it's really the most important thing. Like, that's what we should be talking about all the time, in my opinion. And so from there they say, okay, great, but now what? And so I say, well, okay, to get started, let's start with natural light. That one's easy. You don't need to buy anything. It's available all around you. And it's actually my favorite light source, and it's what I learned from, and it's a really beautiful light source. It's going to keep your whites true to what they are, your colors true to what they are. So let's start looking at natural light. And there's a couple of different ways to look. I mean, there's a million different ways to look at it, but just at the rudimentary level, I say, let's look at indoor natural light. So let's look for your biggest window that you have in your house or in your workspace, in your retail shop, wherever it is. Ideally, if it's north facing, that's great. If not, let's look for that biggest light source. And let's look at the type of lighting that's coming from there. And also there's the option of open shade, which you can go outside and take photos next to a big building, for example. Anywhere you can find a big patch of open shade. So it's not going to work if it's like high noon and the sun is directly over your head, but pay attention to where that open shade is near you, near your workplace, because that's also going to be a really great spot to start taking product photos. And so that's where we start. And from there, I say, okay, let's try to understand what that light looks like at any given time of the day. So you've got some natural light, like let's just say you've got some natural light coming in, a nice big display window in your retail shop. Let's pay attention to what that looks like at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then every hour on the hour from there, so that you can start to see what that looks like and where the shadows are falling and when you get direct sunlight and when you don't get direct sunlight. And that's kind of step one, is really just looking at the light around you and what you have available. And what I always remind my students of at that time too is, notice I didn't say anything about your device. Mm-hmm. We didn't even talk about that yet. Because in my opinion, you can take a really great looking photo using your smartphone. It's fine. Like, sometimes that just makes more sense for your workflow than getting out your DSLR camera and going through all of those phases. That's fine. Let's understand the light. Let's just start there. So that's step one. And then step two is, okay, now we're going to position your product in a way that would appeal to your target demographic. But let's say that that's too much to consider right now. Let's position your product in a way that you know will flatter it and make it look good. So again, then a lot of times we end up, you know, hopping over to Walmart or Target or Staples, or I don't know what department stores you guys have there. And
we have all those.
You have all those. Okay, good. And to buy some white, we call it Bristol board, but white cardstock or white foam core instead of a light box. Because the other thing is that one of my students who owns a shoe store, she bought a light box to take better photos. They didn't look better, like, and she wouldn't mind me saying that. I'm happy to share with you the results that she got from taking those product photos to put in your show notes as well, because she was a little bit dazzled and fooled by getting an Amazon light box that didn't work for her. And furthermore, she had boots and things like that that didn't even fit inside of it.
So
that didn't work at all for her. So using things like foam core, it costs you about 50 cents, I think, at the department store, and it works every bit as good. And you can customize the size of it. You can create a sweep, which would be to take that card stock and just secure it from one side to the other so that you don't see the seam in the background. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of the best place to start, in my opinion, I think, for product photos. Then you're taking a product photo using natural light that has a white background that has lots of use. Sounds boring, but it has lots of use. Like, where's that photo going to live? Sometimes they live on line sheets for salespeople. Sometimes they're, you know, just going to be on your Etsy shop or on your whatever e-commerce platform you use. And sometimes just having the most basic white background product photo is what you need.
I'm going to have to try that out. I don't think I've ever tried a white seamless backdrop photo for anything, but that sounds like fun. I feel like that's, like you said, I mean, that's kind of step one. Like, that's where you should start before adding in more feeling or more, I don't know, props, I suppose, to really enhance the appeal of a photo. But that kind of brings me into this next question that I have, which is, you know, as a wedding photographer, I love taking pictures of people because, especially at a wedding, they're happy. They're always, this is literally like the happiest day of their life. And that emotion on their face is very easy to capture because they're going to have mm-hmm. it naturally. So for something without any sort of expression or emotion, like a coffee cup, what do you do to deliver different sorts of looks?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I'm happy that you asked it. So there's all kinds of things that you can do with camera angles and with exposures that can still convey an emotion or a perspective that you may not consider day to day. So for example, if you're taking a photo of a coffee cup and you take it from a slightly lower angle, I don't know if I can say eye level because mm-hmm. it's a coffee cup, like where is it sitting?
But if you where's its eyes?
Yeah, where's its eyes? But if you're angling it slightly beneath the coffee cup, so it's a bit of an upward angle, well, that communicates authority and power. And the same is true of people. So camera angles, like, never underestimate the power of camera angles because they can convey all kinds of things. And I always like to tell my portrait clients things like this too, because I don't know about you, but when you're taking photos of people and they have all kinds of insecurities, like, let's just say yes. As photographers, as soon as you get out the camera and you're about to take a photo of a person, they start to unload their insecurities. And so there's like a little bit of a psychological exercise, I think, that comes into play when you're photographing people, for sure. But the first thing that they'll want to do if they're insecure about maybe some extra skin under their chin is to stick it out like this. And so then I always kind of have to go through like a little bit of a chat about how the camera perceives things. And basically at the most like rudimentary level, I say whatever is closest to the lens is going to appear the largest. So if you're like, I know people can't see me, but if you're sticking your chin out like this to try to eliminate any extra skin that's there, now what's the closest thing to the camera? It's your chin. It's just going to look really big. And I know that that's not what you want. So the goal is always to get whatever you want to be the most prominent, closest, or, you know, the most prominent closest to the lens. So if you're angling it down a little bit, it just kind of gives it that look of authority, even though it's an inanimate object. Mm-hmm. And then conversely, if you're photographing it slightly from above, that conveys like a little bit more of a submissive thing. So to give it context with a person, if you're, and people do this a lot, I see it all the time, I'm sure everybody does, but people love to take their selfie from slightly above, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That does a lot of good things to like even out, you know, fine lines and wrinkles and bring extra skin back and whatever. And it also helps to spill light evenly over your face, like it creates those beautiful catch lights in your eyes. It does all kinds of good things, but it also conveys submission. So if that's something, and I know like we're getting into the psychology of photos here a little bit, but just consider if that's how you're taking a photo, if that's the message that you want to convey with the subject matter of your photo.
That's something that I was taught in film school as well. I mean, just the power of those camera angles. I'm glad that you specifically spoke to that, especially for something, as we said, like a coffee cup, that you wouldn't normally think of these things. Who's going to think of a coffee cup as an authority figure or a submissive figure? But you're 100% right. I know personally, I take all of the photos of my kids at like waist level. Like the camera that I have is at my waist level because I want them to look at themselves as not being less than, you know, as being an equal to people, because most people take photos of their kids looking down. And maybe that's where we get this idea that, you know, something smaller than me, I can kind of control it or take over. But like you said, I mean, that's where it really does get into the psychology of photography. And maybe that's a lot for today. So I want to move on a little bit now, which is, I know that, as you said, you started with taking product photos for your own products, but then eventually other retailers, other business owners started coming to you for you to take photos. So I want to know, I want you to tell me kind of about that first paid product client photo shoot that you had. How did you find them, and then how did it go?
Yeah, I mean, amazing. So I guess what I should say is that I am primarily a commercial photographer. I don't know if maybe I should have said that at the beginning, but my clients are predominantly corporations that need product photos. And the product photos are sometimes inanimate objects, and sometimes their people, because they want their people. Like nowadays, in the age of social media, you really want your people out front too a lot of the time as well. Mm-hmm. And that's who we connect with typically. We connect more with people than products. I guess there was a mixture of things happening. There was kind of the onboarding of commercial photography clients as a photographer. So for me to go in and take their product photos, or for them to be sending me their products and to take those photos for them on their behalf. And then there was also people knocking on my door saying, hey, how did you do that? Can you teach that to me locally? So that's how it got started. Mm-hmm. And then after I got a few more knocks on my door like that, I was like, hang on, the universe is asking me for something and I need to deliver on it. So then I started to offer workshops. So it sort of evolved from one-offs, and then the one-offs kind of became a little more frequent. And then I was like, okay, I can't keep one-offing and while still delivering these services to my commercial photography clients and also running this retail business. Like everything got very busy. That's why I sold the business. But that's kind of how it evolved. And it was an amazing experience, like watching another person go through the process and see those aha moments and get excited. And then watching their e-commerce platform and their social media presence sort of evolve from there was also really exciting. I took a lot of pride in that. And then sometimes I would take screenshots of their Instagram profile, for example, and send it back to them and say, like, this is amazing. And they'd be like, hang on, you're right, it is. Like, I didn't take a second to really step back and look at what I was doing, because I think as entrepreneurs, you kind of just get caught in it, right? You just get caught in the day-to-day, you're on a hamster wheel, you forget to stop and go, wait a second, I'm awesome, look how great that is, and then move on. So it was definitely very rewarding experience on that front, for sure.
So for those listening who maybe are thinking to themselves, I really like this product photography idea and I kind of want to do this for myself, how do you suggest that maybe they go about getting their first client or approaching their first retailer about taking product photos for them?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I mean, there's a number of ways you could do it. And don't be afraid to be scrappy in the early days, because I think that's how many of us are. There's a number of ways you could do it. You could just take a beautiful product photo of a product that you love and post it and tag the company in the photo. They might get excited about that. They might be happy to reshare it. And then that starts to get some eyeballs on your work. Or maybe there's, a company that you admire locally and you could say, hey, I'm just getting started with product photography. I'd be happy to do a free shoot if you would be willing to give me photo credit for it or something like that.
Okay, so just focus on the things that you already like and enjoy and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, can't be any harm in, you know, playing. I mean, we're always, I think as beginner photographers especially, probably always playing around with things. And, I'm sure that products probably find their way into your practice photos. And if they don't, maybe make that part of what you're practicing on. And heck, if you take a beautiful photo and share it with the company, I don't know. I don't think that anything bad could come from that.
Right. They're not going to block you from buying any of their products again in the future or anything. Yeah. That's funny. I remember, one of the first things that I did early on when I first started. This was actually before I even started the podcast. I used Animoto to create like little slideshows and stuff for my wedding couples, which allowed me to like create a slideshow the very next day, like after their wedding, like a full mm-hmm. video. And they loved it. And in fact, like that one thing booked me like 15 weddings that next year. So it was fantastic. So I was excited and I wanted to share this idea with other photographers. And I remember taking a photo just of the Animoto app on my iPad and like posting that to Instagram. And as you said, I believe that I tagged Animoto. They loved it. They shared it. And in fact, because of that, I think they gave me like 2 free years of Animoto. So... And at first, I remember being nervous because I was like, oh, what if they, you know, don't like the photo? And then I thought, who cares? But you're right. Like, it's not like they're just going to stop you from using their product ever again. So you might as well try.
Why not? There's nothing to lose.
So moving forward now, for those listening, this part of the interview is more for photographers who are looking to make a little bit of money with their camera. So if mm-hmm. product photography is the way that they want to do that, how do you recommend that these photographers listening right now, again, focused on the business side of photography, how do you recommend that they start to charge for product photography? Is this a price for a set number of images type thing, or is this more of a custom package per gig?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can only speak to my own experience. I don't know what it's like for all product photographers, obviously.
Well, luckily, I'm just interviewing you.
Oh, good. Okay. So here's how I go. So the first thing I'm going to back up a little bit, though, because the first thing I think that you need to do if you haven't already is develop a portfolio right out of the gate before anybody's going to hire you. They're going to want to see your work. So if you haven't been taking product photos up until now, try to do more of that so that you can create a portfolio and a nice variety of product photos and an easy way for somebody who could potentially hire you to see those. And there's all different types of product photography. So I talked a little bit about, you know, throwing your product in front of a white background. That's just one. You're going to need to understand lifestyle photos a little bit better and all types of commercial photography. Like I said, it can also include people as well, not just products, but maybe there's some people involved in the product, or if the product is a fashion item, for example, you'll need to get a little comfy with dealing with people as well, which is a little different than a product who isn't going to sass you or blink or
like
whatever.
Like a coffee cup, yeah.
Like a coffee cup. So start by creating a portfolio. And after that, you need to decide how much you'd like to get paid. And I think that you probably have a whole separate podcast on coming out with pricing. But at the very rudimentary level, you need to make sure that it makes sense for you, that it's going to cover your expenses, and that there's still going to be a little bit for you to put in your pocket after that. So think about your pricing. In my experience, commercial clients really like having flat rates that they can work with. Or even quotes. So a lot of them will ask you, okay, well, can you give me a quote to do this job? And if you're working with a crew of other, videographers, or, you know, sometimes there's a creative agency involved and things like that, they do like to have those flat rate options for your time. So for me, I break it into 1 hour coverage, half day coverage, and full day coverage, along with travel expenses. So a lot of times product photography can take you in new places that you'll need to have some fees associated with what you'd like to charge people for your time to travel. And depending on how far you're traveling, fees that you'd like to charge for potentially staying overnight in a hotel and covering your meals and things like that. And I'm sure that in your pricing episode, there's more talk about things like that, but you need to consider what you'd like to be paid, and having those flat rate options is a really good place to start. It doesn't mean that every customer is always going to fit into that 1 hour, 4 hours, or 8 hours, however you do it, but it's a good starting point. And from there, you might say, you know, additional hours on top of these options costs this much, like $200 an hour or whatever, just to give you a ballpark of what you might charge. And again, I'm talking $200 Canadian, so yeah. Maybe that's like a couple of bucks per hour US dollars. So I think that that's a really great place to start. Develop your portfolio, decide what you'd like to be paid, and take a look around you and see who seems to have their product photos covered and who doesn't. And you can start locally. That's an easy place to start. And like I said, if you're in our previous little chat there, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to do some freebies to get your word out there, to get the word out there that you're doing this and what your work looks like to start. And then from there, quickly behind, you'll want to establish your prices, your portfolio. And then you're going to need a web presence, right? So maybe that's a website, maybe it's a Facebook page. It all comes down to, again, like a little bit of marketing talk, but where is your target customer hanging out online? Like, do you need a website? Maybe you don't. Are they hanging out on Facebook? Then maybe that's enough. I don't know. That's kind of something that I think individually you'll need to decide for yourself. But for the most part, I think those are kind of the three main pillars of creating a product photography business.
Yeah, that was pretty well laid out there. I think that you got it pretty much covered. I had one question, though, just to dive a little bit deeper, which was that you mentioned, you know, coming up with this quote. So maybe 1 hour, half day, and then full day, and then also whatever extras that you might include. So what are those extras that companies might be purchasing? Are we talking like expedited editing and things like that, or are we talking about products?
Yeah, so in my world, those flat rate prices include one round of retouching and your online gallery, so your hosting gallery for host, and I host the images for 1 year. So they can keep their images there, they can grab them from there, they can order prints from there, you know, they can share them with their colleagues from there. All that stuff is included in my flat rate. If they would like an additional round of edits, that's charged by the hour. Other add-ons would be things like travel, and then travel expenses, like I mentioned. And like you said, if they want something expedited, then we would charge a little bit more money for that. But for the most part, in the world of product and commercial photography, unlike my experience with things like wedding photography, the turnaround needs to be much quicker, because for the most part, we're dealing with people who are selling products, and they don't want to wait a month after the product has been released to reveal the photos of it and sell it. So for that reason, I have a designated photo editor. So I actually, believe it or not, I do not edit my own photos. Someone else does that for me, because usually what happens is I'm so busy shooting that I don't have time to stop and edit the photo in order to adhere to the quick turnaround times. So I hand off my files to someone else, and they take care of the retouching and delivery of the photos.
I love it. And I think people get really consumed with the idea that they must do their own editing. But really, especially with something like products, it's like those are two entirely different things, the shooting side of it and the editing side of it, that I think that's just smart. So I know that we've talked a little bit about marketing, and, you know, you've mentioned that you enjoy marketing, right? So I want to go a little deeper and find out, what is it that you are doing this week to market your business?
So Facebook Live videos, which I have to admit, yeah, that takes a little, there's a little mindset work that goes into going live. So I did some Facebook Live videos this week. I also have a podcast that targets creative entrepreneurs. So I do that every single week. And I share my work online as much as possible. So using Instagram and Facebook, I'll share my work. I'll share tips for creating great looking product photos. And I think that's about it.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was actually talking with a photographer this morning who wanted specifically like a little bit of help in marketing their business. And they mentioned, you know, that they're trying to be on all these social platforms, that they're also trying to do like these lives, and that they're also trying to be in person. And I thought to myself, like, you're doing so much here. Like, why not just focus on just a few things and get really good at those right now before you start to grow and do those? So thank you so much for sharing, you know, obviously being open about what it is that you're doing this week to grow your business, but also talking about those things like charging for photography, which can just be a difficult conversation to have with people. And I think, again, that you broke it down really easy to understand. So thank you. So going forward, I want to know, what is a common sign that you see of a product photo taken by a beginner photographer versus somebody who's a little more seasoned in product photography?
I love that question. More than one light source. So in my product photography course, I teach right out of the gate, and I probably should have said this when I was talking about it earlier, but start with one light source. Just start with that. And so what that means is if you're taking your photo from inside, say your living room or your workspace or your office or your retail location or whatever, that means flip off all the light switches, because otherwise you're going to be dealing with more than one light source, and that's going to create all kinds of challenges for you. So often what I'll see if I'm looking at a photo that I'm like, okay, that I'm sure that this photo didn't go the way the person intended it to go, or I'm projecting, because I'm thinking if I took that photo, I probably would have been unhappy with XYZ. And usually what the XYZ is color casting. So I'll see a lot of tungsten color casting in product photos, and I know that the photo was taken from somewhere where the person wasn't fully in control of the light. And basically the result of a lamp or an overhead light inside your house or your workspace will create color casting. And nowadays with LED lights, there's all kinds of colors of lights on the market. And you got to be careful, because those throw color around and you may not realize it until you've got this product photo that isn't making you very happy. So I guess that's probably the number one indicator, I would say, that someone is maybe needing a little help with their product photos. The other thing that I hear a lot from my students, the way that they'll say it is, I can't get a crisp photo. I can't get a sharp, crisp, clear photo. What am I doing wrong? And so, I mean, there's any millions of things that could be going wrong, but often it's because you're not steadying your device. Mm-hmm. So any bit of movement, even the movement that comes from, if it's a smartphone, for example, even the movement that comes from hitting that little round circle at the bottom to take the photo can create some motion blur. So usually I'll say, like, just find a way to steady your device. It doesn't have to be fancy. And that's like another thing, I guess, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a mantra that I live by. Like, it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need a high-end tripod. You can make a tripod out of Lego pieces if you need to.
That would be awesome.
Right? I've seen it done. Like, it's like, why not? It's like, if you've got kids, you've got Lego probably. So like, you know, you don't have to be spending money on things, I guess, is kind of my, where I like, that's what I like to reinforce. Like, until you understand what you're spending money on fully, don't spend the money on it. And I guess maybe that's part of like my entrepreneurial perspective coming in, is like, if you don't need to make an expense out of something, don't. And so if the goal is to steady your device, think about how you can do that without buying a tripod. Be creative. It'll save you some money and it might be fun. And so maybe that's just, you know, like steadying it on a surface. Maybe you need to get down on one knee and put your elbow on your knee to steady it, whatever that is. Figure it out. You don't need to spend money.
So spend as little money as possible. Make it as easy as possible and just use one light.
Yeah, use one light, steady your device. Easy peasy.
Okay. Going even a little bit deeper than that, obviously, which is, you know, what are some common signs of an amateur photographer? Going, I guess, the other way, not deeper, but what is just some common bad information that you hear being taught to new photographers?
Yeah, I also love that question. And it goes right back to the Amazon box and the gadgets. Like, you don't need those things. You need to understand light and how to control it. It all comes back to that. Understand how to control light and understand what it looks like and look at it all around you. So if the advice is to buy something to fix the problem, I would still dig a little deeper than that personally before I bought the thing to fix the problem. Because in my experience as an early photographer, buying the thing to fix the problem won't fix the problem. Mm-hmm. You first need to understand what's causing the problem. And almost always it's going to, in photography, it's almost always going to go back to your ability to understand and control light. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. That's all that kind of photography is. So if you can get that under control, everything else is just kind of extra at that point. So that's good. Kelly, I know that we're getting to the end of our time here, and I really don't think that there's a better way to to end it than that. So I want to say thank you, obviously, for sharing everything that you did today. But before I let you go, can you share with the listeners where they can find you and keep up with you online?
Yeah, of course. So I hang out on Instagram. You can find me there at Kelly S. Lawson. I was late to the Instagram game, so I didn't actually get my name.
Kelly Lawson,
Kelly
got it.
Kelly S. Lawson. And I have a website, kellylawson.ca. Also, I have a free product photography masterclass where I teach the form... I'm going to say that again. Where I teach the four-step framework for taking a beautiful product photo that will get your audience excited. And you can find that at kellylawson.ca/masterclass.
You know, my biggest takeaway from this interview with Kelly was just obviously that, you know, kind of no matter where you're at in life, you can always choose to do something new. And that even applies to photography, honestly. I mean, you know, I've been shooting weddings for 10 years, but maybe I want to shoot something else. You know, is that a bad thing? I don't think so. No, it's not. And if you want to change things up, then just change things up. If it feels right to you, just go ahead and do it, you know. And if you don't like it, then you can always go back. Just be like Kelly and just rock whatever it is that you decide to do. So again, really awesome interview here today with Kelly Lawson. So that is it for this episode. And do not forget to do your business a favor. Check out the Contract Vault. You will find all of the photography contracts that you need right at your fingertips. That's www.thecontractvault.com. And then you can even use promo code BPP for 20% off your first month. That's code BPP for Beginner Photography Podcast. You're listening to this right now. So until next week, I want you to make do. Seriously, I want you to make more. I want you to do more. And I want you to make do with the gear that you got, because I promise you, it's better than you think. All right, talk to you.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.